You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male or female servant, or his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. That is the 10th commandment. Number 10 of 10. And you might say it is the commandment that underlies all the other commandments. Coveting and, of course, idolatry, as we've mentioned throughout this series. Coveting and idolatry lead to murder and adultery and lies and stealing. Coveting and idolatry cause us to dishonor the Sabbath and to disobey our parents and leaders. Coveting and idolatry are the worship of the self and anything over and above God. In the Catholic defined mortal or cardinal sins, we are talking about envy and pride. The last two sins that we're dealing with in this series, and the two that underlie all the others. Just consider the garden. Adam and Eve have everything. They have paradise, the beauty of it all. All the food that they can enjoy. Variety. They've got each other. A perfect relationship and, of course, an untainted relationship with their Maker, God Himself. But all of it was not enough. They wanted the one thing they could not have. Of all the rest, they envied that thing. And then when they heard that it would make them like God Himself, that they could be gods unto themselves, then pride caused their downfall. Many years later, Cain and Abel come along and they make an offering to God. Abel's comes with a right heart. Cain's does not. Abel's receives God's favor. Cain's does not. And Cain is filled with envy. And he kills his brother dead. And that, of course, is the wrath that we talked about last time. Tonight, as I mentioned, we're focusing on envy, and we've just seen how the first two recorded sins in the Bible have envy lurking beneath. And it continues in that vein. Jacob and Esau. Rachel and Leah. Joseph and his brothers, Israel and Egypt, Saul and David, even Jesus and, of course, the Pharisees. Time after time, envy rears its ugly head. And so I'll admit that as I considered and thought about choosing one of these stories for this evening, I just couldn't pick one. And instead, I chose Psalm 73, as we've just read, more so because it is one of the most helpful passages in medicating against envy. And envy is a sickness. It is a poisonous cancer that can eat away at our souls and cause us all sorts of bitterness and resentment and spite. And so tonight what we're going to do is we're going to consider its symptoms, its cause, and its treatment. And its symptoms are many. As I said, the deeper we go into these sins, the more you see them playing out in our lives, the more they are corrupting us. The New Testament has mentions of envy in nearly every list of sins and in every description of life before Jesus Christ redeems us. I could talk at length about selfish ambition caused by envy. About friction and strife caused by envy. About bitterness and resentment caused by envy. Or about anger and greed caused by envy. All things which are symptoms of this cancer. Things that we've already looked at as we've gone through this series. But I want to focus tonight on just two symptoms that we all need to deal with. And that is comparison and discontent. Both very constant, both very relentless in all of our lives. Comparison is so deeply ingrained within us, isn't it? Often we don't even notice that it's happening. In fact, wherever there are relationships, wherever there is connection with one another or community together, then there is comparison. We do it just by looking at other people. We compare looks, we compare achievements, we compare experiences or wealth, we compare possessions, we compare clothes or families even, or houses and cars. We compare personalities. We compare churches. We compare jobs. We compare Mother's Days, perhaps. We compare everything to everyone all the time, constantly. We're just ticking it over. And social media, of course, only amplifies this, doesn't it? Because it's right in front of our faces. And this is what Asaph was doing in Psalm 73, comparing himself to the health and the wealth and the well-being of all these other people. Envying, he was, the arrogant, easygoing non-believer, because they seemed to have it all. They seemed to have their cake and eat it too. And we do it as well, don't we? We look at the world and we think, that'd be so much easier. So much better. It's freedom to chase pleasures and experiences and money and not to feel guilty about it. And this religion business that we're part of, it's like a cage. It's a straitjacket. Of course, the grass is so much greener on the other side. And it's not just comparison with other people that gets us. We even, to a certain extent, compare with other versions of ourselves. Perhaps the version of past me or future me or an alternate reality of myself or a make-believe version of myself. Adam and Eve, they envied God, but they also envied a future or alternate version of themselves where they were as good as God, equal to God, on par with God. Israel envied a past version of themselves where they were eating leeks and onions by the Nile. That was way better, they say. And meat, of course. Blessed meat. Can't blame them in so many ways. But we all tend to do likewise, don't we? We compare with the youthful version of ourselves, strong and unburdened, perhaps. We compare with the alternate version of ourselves that's not sick, or has cancer. We compare with the future version of ourselves that retires on a sweet nest egg and can just take life easy. We compare with other people. We compare with fantasies. And all of it breeds discontent. It doesn't matter what we do have. It's all about the stuff we don't have. Everything that's missing. Everything that all those other people have and I don't have it. It didn't matter that Adam and Eve had paradise. They wanted more. More than what was good for them. It didn't matter that Israel had been rescued from back-breaking oppression and slavery. They wanted more. It doesn't matter that we have breath in our lungs, or food in our fridge, or clothes on our bodies, or roof over our heads. We want more. It doesn't matter that we have families, or friends, or a church family. We want better families. We want what our friends have. We want a church that caters more to me. What we have is not enough. The gospel, perhaps, is not enough. Forgiveness of Jesus is not enough. The promise of eternal life is not enough. We've got to have more. And it starts to become clear as we think about it. What's at the heart of this constant comparison and this continual discontent? Yes, we know that it's sin and it's idolatry. But ultimately, it's that we don't trust God, isn't it? We don't trust Him to provide for us, to satisfy us, to fill us, to complete us. In some of the adoption seminars that Kath and I attended, learning about attachment theory and stress responses in young children, they use the illustration of mice and food. One mouse who has a very regular, consistent supply of food, and another mouse who has a very irregular or faulty supply of food. And the one with a regular supply is content and comfortable. It will only go to the food source when it needs it and is quite happy to do so. But the other mouse with an irregular supply is stressed, and it hoards the food that it can get, and it visits the source incessantly, and it's always looking around other places for food, alternate sources. And now, I don't want to belittle God simply being a needs dispenser, but I do want us to see how we can be a bit like that second mouse. We don't trust the source. We consider it irregular, and so we stress and we fret and even envy others. We depend on our own efforts or abilities, or we hoard in order to be safe and secure. But it's not real. Trust in ourselves more than we trust in God. And that is what leads to doubt. That is what leads to discontent and ultimately to envy. We look at others and we wonder if we should secure our future like them or differently. We look at the world and we wonder whether satisfaction actually comes from other methods. We look at the way that we might have been or that we could be or that we should be, and we wonder whether contentment is down another path. And we're just missing out completely. And we do it with our religion as well, don't we? Trying to secure our future with God by our own efforts, wondering whether we should do it more like so-and-so who seems to have it all together and seems to be so religious and spiritual and connected to God. We think that we're on the wrong path to pleasing God when we look at others and see that they're doing it so much better. And see, all the while, God builds complexity and variety and choices into this world as a good thing for our enjoyment. And he knows that we can't do it all. He knows that, but we're supposed to trust that that's okay. But we don't. We turn it into stress, massive stress and FOMO. If you don't know what that means, fear of missing out. Always, that's what we're doing. Because we trust in our finite selves. And where Proverbs 3 verse 5 says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding," we are so inclined to do the opposite. To not trust in God and to lean fully on our understanding. Adam and Eve, they should have known that God's plan was best. It was a perfect world. They should have trusted in his wisdom, but they didn't. They leaned on their own understanding and decided that God was withholding something from them, something awesome. Israel should have known that God's plan was best. They should have trusted in his wisdom, but they didn't. They leaned on their own understanding and decided that God had led them into an even worse situation than slavery in Egypt. They should have trusted that manna would provide them with everything they need. It came down from heaven after all. But they didn't. They leaned on their own understanding and they decided they had to have meat. They demanded it. We should know that God's plan is best. That he provides true freedom as the creator and the redeemer of mankind. That he does always what is best. We should trust his wisdom, but we don't, do we? So often we lean on our own understanding. We decide that freedom comes from doing things our own way. Like, God, he's withholding good stuff from me. I can tell, I can just feel it, and so I'm going to go and take it for myself. And we are so fickle. Just as Adam and Eve forgot the good things they had in the garden, all that good stuff, for the one thing they didn't, so we forget the incredible goodness of God. Just as Israel forgot the suffering of Egypt, how much they hated it, so we forget that the world out there is not happy. Not happy at all. It seems like freedom to chase pleasures and experience, but where does it lead? It seems to make sense to just pursue happiness, but at what cost? It seems this way because the sickness distorts our perspective. The cancer of envy, of comparison and discontentment and self-trust. Cancer blinds us to the truth. That's what sin does. And so we need to be treated, to be fixed. And the treatment is, of course, through the gospel. And in and through it, to trust God with all our heart. Turning point for Asaph in the psalm, coming back to Psalm 73, is in verses 16 and 17. And he says there, "When I tried to understand all this, it troubled me deeply until I entered the sanctuary of God. Then I understood their final destiny." And again, you see, when he tried to lean on his own understanding, it failed him. Couldn't figure it out. But when he approached God, when he recognized the presence of God in his life, then he understood. Then he gained perspective. "I get it now," he's saying to us. "The world seems to have it all going for them. They seem to be happier. But we all die one day. And no one can secure their eternal future. No one. Only God can do that." And he basically says, "Man, I was an idiot before. Before I went into God's sanctuary, I was like a beast," he's saying. "I was an idiot in my thinking. I was completely stupid. God is truly the only way. Truly the only freedom." And see, the point is, envy only exists when we dwell on this life and all that's about it, this temporary, fleeting, broken life. But with an eternal perspective, we will not envy. We can't envy. With the promise of perfect contentment to come, we need not compare or covet. And it's not just about eternity, because trusting God also means acknowledging his provision and his goodness in this life, in the present. Just as the psalmist frequently does, despite the hardships he faces day after day. Here's a couple of examples. Psalm 16, beautiful psalm. Psalmist writes there, "I say to the Lord, you are my Lord. Apart from you, I have no good thing. Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup. You have made my lot secure. The boundary lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. You make known to me the path of life. You'll fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." Psalm 34, that popular line, "Taste and see that the Lord is good. Those who seek the Lord lack no good thing." And in Psalm 37, which is a very similar psalm to 73, also about the problem of envying the world. It starts like this. Do not fret because of those who are evil, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in God and He will give you the desires of your heart. And I could go on just in the Psalms, and of course there's more. The more we acknowledge God's provision, past, present, and future, the more envy loses its hold on us and contentment returns to our lives. And this is exactly what the gospel is to do for us in the now and in eternity, providing us that ultimate contentment in Jesus Christ. And this is how Paul can say in Philippians, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. The secret is, read the rest of Philippians. What a book. And he says, I can do all this through him who gives me strength. And how he can say in his first letter to Timothy, but godliness with contentment, that is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with that. And how David can say, better the little that the righteous have, than the wealth of many wicked. For the power of the wicked will be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. Wealth is transient. Possessions are fleeting, as the old saying goes. Desire is fickle. And envy is poisonous. Trust in the Lord. Find contentment in the gospel. Be satisfied by God. I read a quote this week. It was actually last week. But it said that if we spend more time considering how to help and to serve those below us, we automatically spend less time envying those above us. And when I read the very last line of Psalm 73, which says, I will tell of all your deeds, I thought, that's the key. Isn't that it? I will tell of all your deeds. I will share what I have with other people. That's what it means to serve those who are lower, those with less. Because if we play the comparison game properly with absolutely everything in mind, we will see that it's those without God, it is those without His goodness and without His promise of eternity that we most need to help. And so if we want to boil the whole thing down, this is it. Envy is about bitterly desiring what other people have. But gratitude and trust is a desire for others to have the incredible thing that you have. And if you can take anything away tonight, I pray it will be that. Envy is a bitter thing. I want what they have. But with trust in God and a gratitude for Jesus Christ, His Son, what can we do but desire that everybody might have what we have? And it's this trust and this gratitude that will, excuse me, treat your envy and heal you of that spiritual cancer. Whether in joy or in trials, whether in the garden or in the wilderness, we have Christ. We have everything that we need. So trust in God and give thanks for His blessings. I was going to finish by reading the last six verses of Psalm 73. Brilliant verses they are. But instead, I actually want to play them, the Sons of Korah version. And just so that we can reflect and we can pray and we can just confess them as well. So I want you to just take the opportunity to sit, to consider the words. If you have your Bible, put them in front of you. They'll also be on the screen as we just listen to the solution to our envy and the goodness of having God in our lives. Thanks, guys.